You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Hello, hello.
Hey.
Highway.
This is the good part of the show.
Yes, yes.
This is the best part of the show. We saved it for the paywall.
Always. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the YouTube audience. And for everybody else, you know. Way, tonight we have Raw coming out of a SummerSlam to discuss. The Raw after SummerSlam. Is that the new thing?
They're trying to make it the new thing, certainly.
I don't know if this was that tonight.
I mean, you had a lot of stars on the show by the end.
Yeah, I guess
yeah.
So.
Like, not, I mean, not. Is Raw after WrestleMania that make big of a thing anymore?
I guess fans treat it as such. I mean, you're still in the home market, which they were here as well. So
I think listen, you should be making every edition of Raw feel like it's something special.
It's the Raw after Memorial Day weekend. Yeah.
It's the second Raw after SummerSlam.
Yeah, it's the first Raw of September. Plenty of different acronyms or taglines we can attach to people. Do want to make mention of several things. Wei and I did shows after both nights of SummerSlam. You can get those here on the YouTube channel. Make sure you hit that goddamn subscribe button, okay?
Do you know what our number is right now, John?
It's close.
19,000. 994.
94.
We're six people.
The
away.
Magic number is six. We might not go off the air tonight until we hit this.
We're like, you know, half the number of people in that TLC match from last night. That amount of people away. If a third of the people from the TLC match hit subscribe at Post Wrestling on YouTube, we'd be at 20,000.
Like when we're that close. Like, if you are listening to this live right now and you have not hit the button yet and still don't, like, you're a piece of shit. Like, that's just the conclusion I can only come to make. Like,
obviously.
It's a click. That's all it takes.
Oh, yeah.
We strive for these numbers. It's so important. So please, for the sanity of post-wrestling, please. As well, dropping tonight for post-wrestling cafe members, all right? We have dropped the two magic words in post-wrestling history, a post-profile. It is the complete story of Hulk Hogan that I did write on the site. It has now been all collected into one giant piece, but that's not all, because I spent so many hours today, literally like right up until Raw, finishing this. We have the audio version as well, not just voiced
Amazing.
By me, but we clip the hell out of this, okay? Some hard-to-find clips throughout the man's career. Has John Pollock ever interviewed Hulk Hogan? The answer is yes. Did I dig that up? Maybe.
Yeah,
okay.
I remember that well. You know, it's not often John will throw the post-profile label out there for much of anything. So, you know, when he does, he has a lot of pride in what he has just worked on. And of course, we know the great work he put into those written pieces, but now you're getting it with a lot of audio clips embedded in between as well. So I don't know if we'll have all the clips available for the YouTube version, but we encourage you guys to go to, well, right now for early release, patrons at postwrestlingcafe.com, and then a little bit later on in the week on our podcast feeds, our audio podcast feeds, to listen to the story of Hulk Hogan.
All right, so that is in your feed now if you are a Post Wrestling Cafe member. And if you are on the cafe, coming up Tuesday, actually, we're going to release our first review of Unreal, the WWE series on Netflix. We are going to review all the episodes, starting with episode one on Tuesday. And then we've got two more G1 shows coming up this week, plus Rewind Away on Thursday, covering the best of the WWF Volume 16. That's all for cafe members as well. You get live access to Rewind to Dynamite, Rewind to SmackDown, and this show. As soon as the shows end, you get the full news pack. We went about 30 minutes heavily talking about the Brock Lesnar situation, his return, and what is alleged in the complaint by Janelle Grant, as well as many other news items. So once again, postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door. And if you are allergic to commitment, you can also grab the new post profile, purchase it a la carte with no strings attached as well. I do have to make a correction from last night that Way put me on the spot, and it was after the show that I was kicking myself that I did have this incorrect, so I do want to set the record straight. You had asked me the last time I had applied to go to a WWE show.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I did not actually apply for WrestleMania this year. So technically, the last time I did apply for a WWE show was last year's SummerSlam, and I have not been denied a WWE show. I have also not applied for any recently as well. So I want to set the record straight there because I misspoke.
Okay. All right. Sorry to put you on the spot, but thank you for the correction.
Yeah. Way read me the riot.
So when are you going again?
As I said last night, there is no incentive to go at this point for like the purposes of what we do. Like my only reason to go to these would be the press conference, which was not even something that was guaranteed that I would have access to. Like at this point, for people that are maybe aren't familiar with like the process of this that Way and I have been through many times, like if you get in several days early, you do have access to a media day. But beyond that, it's...
Can we also clarify? So we did go to SummerSlam last year.
Yes.
Did you get to the press conference?
Not at SummerSlam. I got to the press conference at Money in the Bank the previous month, but not at SummerSlam.
Right. So yes. For certain bigger events, WrestleMania was also one of them. They only had so many spots, or they were more selective.
Yes, I've been hit and miss when it comes to the access at the press conferences. There's some I've gotten into, some I have not. Sure. But yeah, like you have the media day, which technically you can get like some interviews. But if you're just coming in for the weekend, for instance, like you are positioned like in the media box and you're just like watching the show. And for the purposes of what we do, it only slows us from like we'd have to do a show that much later, and like we're just there to watch it. So like it's really not, we are not incentivized to budget towards traveling to some of these shows unless there's something we are getting out of it that is so specific to our audience. So I mean, this is not a reflection of just this decision to end the pressers. It's one Way and I have had a discussion on, and it's one of the reasons we have not been going to these shows, is just like what are we getting out of it versus covering it from home. And there's absolutely value to being there and things you can do in person, but man, there's a lot of advantages to being at home. And quite frankly as well, like the, you know, it's a big cost when you and I travel.
I'm curious to see if AEW will respond in any sort of way, or if this will just make them continue to commit to doing these post-show press conferences.
I don't see AEW dropping them for that reason. Like, I think they always could at some point. Like, they have had, like, their situations where they've had, you know, stories that they've had to address. But, you know, it's, you know, they they could always one day wake up and want to shut these down. You know, a lot of the thought process about these, and it was specific to UFC for a long time, was the idea that, you know, these press conferences, the idea would be you would host these. And there was a time, not only did you have the press conference with the fighters coming, Dana taking questions, then Dana would do a scrum afterwards. And like, why is he doing this? It's because these would just fuel like all these sites. And it's like, well, we don't have another pay-per-view for 4 weeks. And it's like, you're going to have these stories that are just going to constantly, like, you get all of these stories out of them. The scrums afterwards were not initially being streamed either. So it's only the people that were there that were getting these stories. And, you know, WWE, I have reached out to WWE specifically to give them the opportunity to give any reasoning for this decision, because I think naturally everyone is going to come to the same conclusion that here was this big move we're making with Brock Lesnar, and it just coincides with the press conferences being dropped. And I spoke to a number of people in who were there at SummerSlam. It was not a case either of them being told in advance, like, hey, there's not going to be any press conference if you're coming. These people were there in New Jersey and found out on Saturday there's no press conference. So if you were, like, I think of someone like a Brandon who would specifically go to these shows for the press conference. And if he had, you know, gotten himself to New Jersey and, you know, booked, you know, whatever it is, and then you get there and the press conference is done, well, it's like you're just like out of luck. And I know people are not going to have any sympathy for that, but that's the reality for a lot of these media outlets of like, it's just one less thing you're going to get out of by going to these events. Like, you're pretty much limited now to the media day on like the Thursday beforehand. And that's like the exclusive content you're going to get for the weekend to travel to these. But WWE, right.
And you're not going to get access necessarily to Levesque. I don't think he's ever done one of those.
Paul Levesque is not going to be doing any type of, unless he specifically chooses to do so. Like, his media is going to be limited to bigger platforms, and it's going to be selective. And that's like the days of Levesque fielding questions in front of like what he started with the NXT calls. Like, that was a very strategic move by him because he felt like that was an audience they needed to cater toward and get coverage. And yeah, I like, you are not going to have access to Paul Levesque at these media days or anything like that. All right, more coming up, I'm sure. We will be talking about all of this on Pollock and Thurston this week. But now we head to Brooklyn, New York for the Raw after SummerSlam. WrestleTick's final number of 11,125. Starting the show is, wait for it, The Vision.
Well, you didn't know that at the start of this segment, but well, now we do.
We have our name, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they come out. Reed continues with the shoes. More on that later. And Heyman, who refers to himself as the GOAT, your humble oracle, talks about Braun as the future of the WWE. The tribal thief, Bronson Reed, takes his shots at Reigns and Punk, and then says how Seth crashed the wedding, but also stole the honeymoon with the title. And she was good. And Rollins takes over and says, shame on you, you goddamn fans, for turning your back on me after I won the main event of WrestleMania and then taunting me for months with CM Punk and OTC chants, never doubt me again. And then shame on the locker room who tried to stop me from cashing in. How did the locker room try to stop him?
Sure.
I don't know. Well, it doesn't matter because he's always got a plan B, and this plan B was top secret. Only two people were aware of this. His wife, Becky Lynch.
John Pollock's source.
I was ready to, no.
Is there a source, Becky Lynch?
No, it was not.
It's their daughter, isn't it? Rue.
Yeah, she knew. Didn't Seth say that his daughter told her teacher?
The teacher, yeah. On the Rich Eisen show, yeah.
Could you, like, this is, like, example number 5004 that you and I are not professional wrestlers, but, like, if you were, could you imagine taking your kid to preschool?
Yeah.
And selling an injury? And it's like the parent, maybe the parents know what you do, like, oh, that's way, he does that wrestling stuff. It's like they see you on crutches. They come over. It's like, oh, what happened? What happened? And like you actively lie to these people and stuff. And then 2 weeks later, like you're just totally fine. It's like, oh, I was doing a storyline. Could you imagine like doing this in like 2025?
I can't imagine, but I can't imagine like doing 90% of the things that these guys do for a living. So that's a level of commitment that I mean, I really do admire. I think it's awesome.
I think if I did this to any of like my kids, like friends' parents, I don't think they'd ever talk to me again. I think they just,
yeah,
think
but
nuts.
If you're a wrestler, it's almost like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
But these are people like that don't follow wrestling. They're like, oh, okay, you just made up all this shit and stuff. So cool. Yeah, we're going to be talking over there. So anyway, he committed to the bit. He says that they have absolute power. They are the past, the present, and the future. This is the Vision.
The Vision, yeah. Yeah, well, I guess we've been waiting quite a while for a name for this group. And they've landed on the Vision. And I think it's fine. I mean, it's not bad. It's decent. Marvel might have something to say about the copyright, but I'm sure they'll figure all that out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, are there any known porn sites that are the Vision?
Because
WWE has treaded into these waters before.
There's probably a porn site with for anything.
They're not going to be they weren't the Submission Brothers here.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
LA Knight comes out and he says how the reason we can't understand why you faked this injury when you still had the briefcase. That doesn't make sense. The reason you faked the injury was to get out of the match with me so you wouldn't get hurt like I told you I was going to do. So I was the last one to beat you, and I'm also going to be the next. So, I mean, it's kind of weird because it's like Seth in storyline, like willingly threw this match to LA Knight. So Knight really didn't accomplish much here.
What do you mean?
Like he didn't really beat Rollins. Rollins through the match.
But in the record books, he still has a win.
Okay, but it's a kind of like empty win. It's like, I took a dive for you. It's like, are you really going to be
well, you would still
proud
be
of that?
Within your rights to ask for a title match.
Why, so. In storyline, why would Rollins do that? Why would he
why fake the entire injury, right? And his feeling is that, I guess like what he's trying to say is that other people would have prevented him from cashing in. I guess in the case of Punk would have been in the match, so I guess not that, but I don't know, whoever else. So he felt the need to just throw everybody off the scent so that he could have a clear path to cashing in.
Okay. Rollins then says that, he is challenged by LA Knight tonight, and Rollins teases agreeing, but of course doesn't. So Adam Pearce comes out and he's pissed at Seth for lying to the medical team and to him. And so I usually want to promote a title match in advance, but screw it. We've got guaranteed money on Netflix. So we're just going to give away a title match on 2 hours' notice. And he makes the match for later with Braun and Braun banned from ringside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought Knight sounded really great in his delivery. And really the atmosphere, like whatever, like no matter whether or not you knew about the injury, whether or not you believed in the injury, the end result is what feels like a big moment and like a sort of leveled up Seth Rollins, you know, as a result of this entire thing. So I would still say it was a very big success.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
G1 Climax season continues on the Post Wrestling Cafe as we march toward the final on August 17th. Every single match in the tournament will be covered. Plus, we're going back to 2001 for a review of The King of the Ring, featuring Kurt Angle taking on Shane McMahon and Edge winning the tournament. Plus, John and Wei are going to be reviewing all episodes of the WWE Unreal series on Netflix. Ask Away, Post Pro Res, Collision Course, so much more can be found monthly at postwrestlingcafe.com. Judgment Day are backstage, and Dominik celebrates his title defense the night before, but Raquel and Roxanne, they're down after losing the tag belts. They leave. They walk up to the LWO, and Dragon Lee challenges Dom to earn his respect tonight with a match. And Dominic agrees because he was out to show his respect. AJ comes up and tells Dom how clever it was what he did last night, nailing him with the boot, but I'm still coming for that belt. Eventually, you'll run out of tricks. Time's running out. And Dom says, yeah, it's running out because you're old. It's a good line from Dominic. But yeah, so I guess this continues. Yeah.
It really was AJ who was the one with the more of the tricks, you know, in the lead up to this entire thing. So, but this was a much more serious tone of AJ Styles that we saw tonight in comparison to the previous week. So I'm wondering if, okay, that chapter was like comedy AJ Styles. Now are we getting serious, ultra serious ice bath AJ Styles?
Oh man, is the ice bath AJ coming back?
Could be. But of course, Clash in Paris. I mean, AJ is the most popular professional wrestler in France, so it makes all the sense that he would go after Dom again in a rematch in Paris.
Maybe he'll bring someone to be in his corner.
Who's that?
He'll fly them over. Air.
That's right. I didn't even think of that. You're right. Wow.
Backup.
Interesting. Wait, what was he? Did he have a nickname?
It was Air Styles and Air Paris.
Oh, wow. Wow. I didn't even think of that.
Long-term.
Long-term.
Okay. Yeah, they've been waiting. They've been waiting 24 years for this. Next was chapter 3 between Rusev and Sheamus. And spoiler alert, this is going to be a long damn book, okay? Rusev is stomping him and then gets hit with the white noise. Both men go down. Okay, the funniest, I laughed. There was a part where, the crowd was not, like, bad, but there were moments where they just were, it was such a lull that you could hear things. And Sheamus gets run into the post, and you just hear this guy yell, "Go back to AEW," right at Rusev.
Oh, my.
It was so audible. And Rusev then runs at Sheamus and gets slammed onto the desk. And then over the barricade, Rusev starts delivering the 10 beats. Sheamus reverses, and he hits them, and both of them get counted out. No red shoes in this match. After 9:52, it's thrown out, and they continue to brawl. The crowd really got into all these pull-aparts and rejoining one another, and they would brawl for the next 2 hours at the Barclays Center, leading up to no announcement of a rematch.
They're saving that up. I mean, I guess I could see this one for Paris as well. Honestly, with the way that they've kind of like built up these matches, this is the third one that they've had on this run. And I really feel like all three of them have kind of been kind of underwhelming, you know, especially with the sort of standard of like the banger level types of like matches that Sheamus has been having. They really have not hit those levels, and I don't think the crowd has engaged with them nearly as much as I feel like they should have. This match was very much the same. I thought the match was just fine. The crowd reactions, though, were the loudest for the brawl afterwards, and that was probably the best part of the match. So I wonder if the type of match they'll actually have might be this sort of false count anywhere type of match, which they've seen great success with Bronson Reed, Braun Strowman, of course, doing a lot more bells and whistles attached to this and just kind of creating a different type of atmosphere might be the key to success for these guys. They're clearly committed to making whatever this feud is work. And so I guess I am somewhat curious to see the next chapter, but it has been underwhelming so far.
A Paris street fight.
Just like just brawl through the Champs-Élysées and the Le Louvre.
Yeah, he could. Someone takes a baguette to the head.
Of course.
How many stereotypes can we come up with? Earlier today, New Day. Still mourning the loss of the tag titles. Xavier Woods has invested in the world's largest sombrero. And is with Grayson Waller. And Waller explains that, he has not been able to get them a tag title shot. So Waller goes up to Pierce and confronts him about this. And he's in mid-conversation with Penta. And Pierce is at a busy day. He's still trying to book the show. So earlier today makes it Grayson Waller against Penta. And it's next. So New Day come out to their music, and they join commentary as Penta and Waller continue here. They trade super kicks, double clothesline, both guys go down. Waller tries for the rolling stunner, but gets caught with a kick, and then sends Penta up into the corner, and he goes for him, and it's a head scissors into a Mexican destroyer by Penta. Finish looked very good here, and Penta beat Waller in 8 minutes and 19 seconds. I thought this match was like, I thought they had like a pretty nice match here. Like, it's two guys that kind of feel de-emphasized of late, but it was a nice match for the time that they had.
That finish was really cool.
Very, really cool. Clever setup for the Mexican destroyer.
Never seen a head scissors like driver, essentially. It looked great. So I think Penta definitely maybe more so just kind of a mid-card guy at the moment, but I do feel like Waller is getting the spotlight coming out of this New Day deal. And I thought he actually was great in that backstage interaction. He really feels like somebody who's who tries to take advantage of every second of airtime he gets to make an impression. And
he's got a tremendous like personality. And to me, it really shined in NXT. And for whatever reason, like I thought with Theory, like, just the two playing off each other, I thought it would bring it out more, and it just it didn't. And we'll see if, you know, it's a different success with the New Day.
Yeah, I don't know if I really like the chemistry between he and the New Day either, but I do think it's like it's an interesting role for Grayson here in being the guy who really wants to be a part of the group, but having the group not really acknowledge him or really just using him. And I feel like he's almost a bit of a Sami Zayn type of character when Zayn was first entering the Bloodline. And it has the potential to have the audience maybe start to get into Grayson Waller the same way they got into Sami Zayn, just simply through maybe the sort of effort that he's putting into performances like what he put into tonight. So I hope that for him. Obviously, the New Day are not really like as sort of like, you know, A-list as the Bloodline, but it doesn't mean that, you know, Grayson Waller can't get something from out of this. I do sense this might be a project for him.
Yeah, the New Day confronted Penta, and he shoves Xavier over Kofi, clears the ring, and then frisbees Xavier's sombrero at him on the floor, and then executed a dive for good measure. So I'm thinking Penta probably is going to get a partner or partners.
Yeah, okay. Well, there really is no brand split anymore, so why wouldn't he call up Phoenix and Andrade?
You could do that if you're going the six-man route. Flair and Bliss are arriving in the back or walking backstage when Sheamus and Rusev have their first of many brawls. This was just comical because we go from just this ridiculous cartoon scene and cut to Charlotte on Unreal. And it was just like you watch Unreal. And I was like, is there a way to incorporate some of this into the show? Because it feels so much more interesting at times when they throw both examples at you back to back, like they did here with the same character in Charlotte. But maybe that's a discussion for tomorrow.
It's tricky, and it's not like F1 will ever throw to show Drive to Survive on their channel, but at least it's a lot easier of a transition. But in wrestling, it's kind of strange and kind of difficult. But like with the clip they did show, didn't it necessarily like contradict, you know, the character on screen?
No, it was just her talking about her injury and coming back. It was like, here's just a much more like human representation of Charlotte, which has kind of been the negative towards Charlotte, is that the audience has up until now not seen this, like, I don't even want to go so far as to say like authentic that we're getting on screen, but more than before, that it's you know, that and the fact is, like, the turning point of all of this was like a humanization of this woman through non-programming of WWE. It was outside projects. Mm-hmm. And like that was the turning point for a lot of the fans, and they were smart to jump on that. Mm-hmm. Then we saw the footage of Lesnar's return, 75 million social views in 12 hours.
Yeah.
So they stopped counting at like 9 in the morning.
But you can keep counting forever.
They could have juiced this number up a lot more.
Maybe the peak was, you know, really the first 12 hours.
And this is where Michael Cole explains. He spoke to Nick Khan and Paul Levesque today, and they were told they reached out to Brock several weeks ago, and said, "We believe it's time for you to come home." And Lesnar agreed.
Yeah, we spoke a lot more about this in the XL edition, but just maybe somewhat interesting that they decided to give the explanation rather than just maybe talk about the return itself.
Yeah, I mean, whatever their reason was, whether they feel like it was, you know, it was limited to like Paul Levesque briefly discussing it on the post show, and the way he had like posited it was that, you know, this was you know, he made it sound like this was a request of John Cena, and you had people like very negative on that. And perhaps, again, this is just my theory, like maybe they just felt that, like, let's just make it clear here. This was a Nick Khan, Paul Levesque decision, and they are the ones that ultimately made this. This is not like a talent that is obviously dictating something like this. But Cena will be on SmackDown Friday night in Montreal, which I'm sure will be a very, very heated crowd in Montreal. Flair and Bliss come out, and Flair holds up both the titles, saying, "Finally, I'm the champion again." And Bliss says, "No, we are the champions again." Flair doesn't want to put a label on what they are. She's not going to use the F word, but tells Alexa that you are such a pain in my A word. And they start counting off their respective title wins when Perez and Raquel interrupt. They want title shots tonight. Flair accepts and tells them, "We're going to kick your A words tonight." And Pierce comes out to make the match official. You can't do too many of these promos and not expect to lose the audience, because this is like the bottom level of like some of the John Cena stuff that he had to pull off.
It really does almost feel like it's overnight that like all of a sudden like people have a great deal of sympathy for Charlotte, and they're very receptive to, I think, like a different version of Charlotte, maybe a more sort of like innocent version of Charlotte. Maybe he's one that is, we could believe is closer to who she actually is in real life. And I feel like they're now trying to bottle that into a character and into scripted dialogue. And the way it's coming out is like sort of like, you know, cute things like the, you know, the F word, or "You're such a pain in my A word," you know, like they're reducing them essentially to like being 7-year olds who might get in trouble for saying bad words. And I did not think this was good at all. But it almost feels like the audience really wants to like them so much that they will continue to just maybe ignore how cringy a lot of this stuff would otherwise be. But yeah, I did not think this was a good promo segment.
The tag match saw the heels get the advantage on Flair, but then Raquel, after Bliss is tagged in, catches a cannonball and runs Bliss into the timekeeper's area. We see Flair return into the ring, high cross onto both, and then hits the moonsault onto both. She also does a front walkover clothesline that Graves accurately described. Perez hits a tilt-a-whirl into a side Russian leg sweep, assisted by a big boot from Raquel. Very nice combo move that they did again here. Corkscrew elbow by Raquel. Bliss makes the save, and then Perez clears out the ring, and as she's going for a dive, Bliss returns and catches her with Sister Abigail in 13 minutes and 51 seconds. I will say my biggest takeaway from this match is that she is clearly like the youngest of these four, and she's been on the main roster the least. Dude, Roxanne Perez is going to be like the nucleus of this division. Like, she is great. I just feel like she, and I was unsure in NXT, like how that heel turn would go, because she was such an excellent babyface, but she was also such an excellent heel. And I think that was a great decision, because I think that it gave her a lot of added confidence that you've seen come up to the main roster to, she can play a heel. She can always be a babyface down the road. But I just think that she is going to be, like, barring any kind of like injury that would slow her down, like this could be someone that is a main player here for minimum another decade.
Oh, she's so young and she's already so good. She's only going to get better provided she stays healthy. So absolutely. I mean, without the heel turn, without the heel run, I think she would have been a great wrestler. But sort of a dime a dozen, you know, great wrestlers in this company. Turning into a heel, as often is the case for a lot of wrestlers, gives them a bit of edge, gives them a bit of like a unique personality. And she can turn back into a babyface tomorrow and still retain a lot of this, the way Rhea Ripley has. So yeah, she's been doing so well. I mean, I would add to that just the number of people in the division right now that are just really killing it. But Roxanne might have maybe the most potential of them all. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Backstage, we have a segment with the Kabuki Warriors with Io Sky, and Rhea walks up. She wants to talk to Io. So the Kabuki Warriors, they got their screen time for the night, and they were told bye-bye. So Sky has gone to request a singles match with Naomi. Rhea has heard about this and says, I hope that you beat Naomi so that I can beat you for the title. Be like, you got some work to do. You've just been losing. And like, what do you think this is? The women's tag division where you just snap your fingers and get a title shot? But Io says, Rhea, you will never beat me. And I do like this. Like this will be a big win eventually for Rhea, but I hope they hold off on it for a while.
It's the biggest obstacle Rhea has. Like, it almost feels like it might be a sort of WrestleMania culminating thing. I mean,
and then she's got the reverse streak, like where she eventually has to win at SummerSlam. That should be years away.
It almost feels like they need to take a break with these two, because they've been paired together for so much. But I mean, they could also like build to like a SummerSlam match with the two, and I think there would be plenty of interest. But it feels like the type of win for Rhea that probably shouldn't occur until like the biggest stage. It's been interesting to see them sort of navigate this with both of them being babyfaces, because it's sort of I mean, there definitely is a real rivalry here that they managed to build up, but and it's kind of required Rhea to play a bit more of a heel in showing her frustrations. And I think she's been doing a good job of that.
But this is one of the examples when I know people hate like the Shades of Grey comparison, but I think when you do these types of programs, like it's just people that are competitive. Mm-hmm. And when you have a strong title that people are all gearing for, it gives you a lot of latitude to be able to do these programs where it's not necessarily you're turning Io. It's just both of them are going for this prize. They're rivals in each other's way. And you can play with that. And you can do subtle stuff with either one. But mm-hmm. it's not like an outright, you know, you have to do this 180 with your character either. And I think they've struck a very good balance with these two for that reason.
And they've made this rivalry compelling enough that they don't even need the championship. So Naomi can be going off with whoever else she's going to go off with after, presumably, she beats Io. And Rhea and Io can still continue what they're doing. And I have to give them a lot of credit, and Io a lot of credit, for doing a lot more English speaking in these promo segments. I think they've been doing a good job of easing her in with appropriate dialogue that feels real for her, and I think she's been doing a great job of delivering it.
Lyra confronts Bayley, who is trying to apologize for SummerSlam, and Lyra announces, I need to get out of this Bayley vortex. We're not good for each other. We're not friends. We're not enemies. We're not even allies of convenience. Just stay out of my damn life. And she walks out. I'm just like, man, we got the breakup here of Lyra and Bayley. I mean, this was heartbreaking.
I like this a lot. I think Lyra continues to really impress me with how well she's able to, well, not just wrestle, but like handle these sort of talking segments. I thought she performed really well here. And I'm much preferring Lyra being this like sort of I don't know, frustrated, unhappy, almost like a bit of an asshole-ish type of character than just the what felt like a very generic babyface role she had against Becky.
Do you think the difference was she didn't wear those shoes, the Becky Stompers that she wore last
week?
Oh
my God, yeah, thank God.
Maybe that was the difference. Maybe. She could have won at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. The Bayley Vortex. Dominic Mysterio and Dragon Lee. This was kind of a backdrop just to promote the four-way for Triple Mania in a couple of weeks that both are involved in. Lee hit a Liger Bomb for a two count, and Dominic was climbing up to the top, slips, lands in the Tree of Woe, and is hit with the double stomp. El Grande Americano runs out, crowd pops for him, then a second one shows up, distracting the ref, and Lee is going after both of them when a third one shows up, nailing Lee from the apron that the referee does not see, and behind the referee's back, Dom takes off his boot, which is his new weapon of choice, and nails Dragon Lee, pinning him in 8 minutes and 12 seconds.
So we have a fourth one now.
If you're including Gable,
Kaiser, we've got the Pete Dunne, and I don't know, I can only assume Tyler Bate.
Poor Tyler Bate,
is that the case?
Yeah,
what does this look like to you?
It looks like Hangman Page when he had that match where he had the or Christian Cage lying next to the ring. I don't think it's either of them.
I love this shit. I think it's so great.
Maybe they'll have an army of them by the time Gable gets back.
We clearly will. Yeah, we'll have at least
the
four
Gable
of them.
Stable. We're building them.
Wow, I love it.
One Americano at a time.
I'm loving all of this. I think it's been a great surprise. I think Kaiser, if you've seen any of the clips from AAA, he's been fucking killing it in Mexico. This gimmick is so incredibly over, and he actually speaks Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, but it sounded pretty damn good to me. So he's been killing it with this gimmick. Maybe even a little bit better than Chad Gable, I might have to say. So
do you know where Raw is next week?
Where?
They're in Ottawa. So what if we got El Grande Canadiana and Vampiro unmasks next week?
No, man, please. I was with you until Vampiro.
No.
God.
AJ runs down at the end and he swings the boot at Dom and tosses it at him as he helps up Dragon Lee. So I hope AJ takes Dragon Lee under his wing. So there you have it.
By the way, not that this is that important, but... isn't El Grande Americano the speed champion?
Well,
now defunct.
Speed doesn't really exist at this point. So
the last speed champion.
Yeah, they're going to have to Photoshop this out and just have his arms in the air. Mm-hmm. You think AJ gets involved in this Triple Mania main event?
Yeah, very possible. Sure.
I can see them doing something there.
At this point, are we still entertaining the idea of AJ like doing Bound for Glory? It's so far away, so why not? Right?
I wouldn't. Yeah. If he's going to do a match, that's obviously the show to right. do it at. Although, I mean, if you go by what Carlos Silva has stated, it sounds like they're off to a really great start, just off the Hardys and Dudleys and whatever momentum they're sustaining from Slammiversary. So, listen, at this point, TNA is getting a great deal out of this whole thing. Jackie interviews Sami Zayn. He said that beating Cross last night, it's not about proving people wrong. It's like, that was the whole basis of this match. The whole basis was, I want you to admit you were wrong. What do you mean this is not about proving people wrong? That was the only point of this.
No, what's the rest of his explanation here?
Well, he says he wanted to use the pipe, but it's not just about proving who I am. It's who I want to be. And what I want to be is a world champion. And I will be a world champion, but I want to do it right. And with that, Sheamus and Rusev brawl into him. And isn't it funny that Sami Zayn wants to do it right, and then he ate a right from Rusev?
Ooh.
And we are going to get Sami Zayn in Ottawa. So it's closest you're going to get if you're going to Montreal this Friday. You got to come back for Raw.
I wonder if they'll have him like do a dark segment or something, which would be nice for the crowd.
Maybe.
Owens isn't there, so, you know. Yeah, it would be nice for the crowd. Zayn keeps talking about wanting to be a champion. And clearly, like, that is trying to set up some sort of, like, long-term story for them. But at least at the moment, it feels like he's getting further and further and further away from it. I mean, this Cross feud, ultimately, I don't think...
He didn't say what world championship. I mean, maybe he goes after Trick Williams.
Yeah, I guess
the Kingo.
So.
Those don't count? No.
No. This Cross feud, ultimately, I don't know if it's done much for him. And now it looks like he's being paired with Sheamus and Rusev, so... At least I don't think he'll be champion this year, if that's what he wants.
Well, we went over the number of tickets distributed. I'm going to assume this was a comp because Method Man was in the building on Monday night.
Not only was Method Man there, Method Man was also there because the person who plays Method Man in the Wu-Tang American Saga show, Dave East, was the next person that they introduced.
Oh, like, wow. I didn't know.
Method Man and Method Man. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Becky comes out to gloat about her win over Lyra and call herself the greatest female wrestler of all time when she is interrupted by Nikki Bella. Nikki comes out and refers to Becky as one of the greatest of all time. And she said, you know, I knew the division was in great hands and that I could step away when I saw you coming up. But man, you turned out to be such a disappointment. And Becky is aghast at this. Says, you've stabbed all these other women in the back. You're handcuffing them. I came back to test myself, but I can't understand why you came back, Becky. Was it just because you were jealous or that Hollywood wasn't what you thought it would be? And Becky, with like the ultimate comeback here, I mean, I sensed where this was going. Mm. This was a 10-8 for Becky here. Says, yeah. She plugs Happy Gilmore and then brings up how Becky's speaking lines were all cut from Happy Gilmore 2, which is completely true.
And she didn't Nikki has mentioned she did not know this until watching the
screening.
Movie, until watching the movie at the premiere, how awful she's doing. She's on the red carpet. She's doing interviews, talking about her role and her character, and then she doesn't appear in the movie. Sucks.
So, it reminds me of this story. I'm not going to say who this was. It's like a semi-known person, but like they were going to be, I don't know if the show was Dexter or it was some other show, but it was like, they were like telling everyone about, man, you've got to tune in. You've got to see it. I'm going to be one of the victims on the show or whatever. And then for whatever reason, it got cut. And it just reminded me of like, if you're ever in that situation, and I'm not going to be, but man, never promote something so big until it's actually out there because, man, unfortunate. And she learns about this during the screening.
So that's all to say, great line from Becky.
Oh, a great line from Becky here. But the promo was not done. Nikki calls Becky a liar, which she literally was not for that.
Well, Becky was saying that she got the part cut.
Oh, that's right. That was actually very funny. Great, Becky said she threw her weight around and got Nikki cut out of Happy Gilmore too. It's like, I let the AEW guy get all the screen time. So Nikki, yes, calls her a liar and says, you're a liar just like your husband. But the people bought Seth's lies. They don't buy yours. You're just insecure. Becky then says, we're the best wrestling couple of all time. And at one time, that would have been you, Nikki, and the whole crowd knows what they are referring to. And Becky just says, oh, you can't see him anymore. The pop this line got was gigantic. And I feel that this crowd in Brooklyn felt that this one was more comfortable to react to than the Charlotte Tiffany Stratton segment. This one felt like it was much more cooperative. And
hold on a second. And we know that. Why?
Because
we don't know that.
Like, no, we don't know that.
I would have said the same thing about that Charlotte Stratton segment too. You never know with these sort of things. You could only hope that maybe they learned from those mistakes and cleared all of this ahead of time with all the parties involved. Yeah,
you can't always make that assumption for WWE, but this one seemed fairly. Nikki felt like she was reacting to a line she knew was coming here. Becky says, I came up to combat your era. Nikki says, this isn't your era, Becky, and makes a challenge for the title. And then she starts with the yes chance as well. I guess, you know, as
Daniel this says, company owns it. They're not going to sue me for doing it.
Trademarked. And Becky just out of nowhere drops her with a right hand and walks out. I thought this was a great segment. Like, seriously, so I thought these two were great. I thought this was one of Nikki's better, like, speaking segments, and they did a really good job of building this up. I did find it really interesting, the fact that, like, not to say they never make mention of one another, but they very much had, like, Seth position Becky as, like, part of this plot to do the Money in the Bank cash-in. They did the video of her reaction online, and then really emphasize Seth in this segment as well. Like, it's the most they have really connected Seth and Becky coming out of this whole thing.
So what's the match? Becky and Seth versus Cena and Nikki.
Oh, Jesus.
Do it. You know, run it back.
You know what? Maybe for one night
only. The relationship, I mean. Run the relationship back.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, well.
No?
I don't know if that's going to be on I don't know if Cena, if that was on his wish list of matches. Maybe.
We're working through the list. I too was very much.
I thought it was a very good segment that the two had. Like, I thought some really great, we assume scripted lines. And I thought by the end of this, you know, I wouldn't say if you were to tell me Becky versus Nikki on paper that you would be too excited about. But by the end of this segment, I thought they did a really good job of getting you here. And given that Becky's wrestling next week, you could probably surmise that this could be in Paris.
Yeah, sure. I could see that for sure. I was actually quite impressed with Nikki here. I think Nikki has a tendency to sound very inauthentic in these sort of scripted promo scenarios, and I thought she sounded really good here as a baby bass voice, which I don't think we've heard her play I can't remember when the last time she would have cut a babyface promo, you know, at least at this sort of length. I thought she got the verbiage out well, and it built to a really great moment. Obviously, the Cena line made the segment, and by extension, the feud. But even without that, I think this still would have been a good segment. I thought the Happy Gilmore line was also great. And it's on paper, it's okay. Match quality is one thing, and I think Nikki has still really yet to like prove herself. You know, she's still shaking off at least a bit of ring rust, and on a stage with Becky Lynch is where she'll really be tested, you know, and be expected to perform. But I think in terms of mainstream appeal, this match probably has that more than most of other Becky's opponents. So let's see what they can bring. And I hope more promo segments between the two, because this was great.
G1 Climax season continues on the Post Wrestling Cafe as we march toward the final on August 17th. Every single match in the tournament will be covered. Plus, we're going back to 2001 for a review of The King of the Ring, featuring Kurt Angle taking on Shane McMahon and Edge winning the tournament. Plus, John and Wei are going to be reviewing all episodes of the WWE Unreal series on Netflix. Ask Away, Post Pro Res, Collision Course, so much more can be found monthly at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Saxon interviewed Naomi, and she's going to defend the title against Io Sky next week. Stephanie Vaquer walks in, and she just reminds her that whoever wins, I get the winner at Clash in Paris. And Naomi responds that she's going to win. And then in Paris, she will take Vaquer's horns and shove them up her ass. And then she proceeds to limp her way off camera to share with us what it will feel like to have horns up your ass.
The best part of that was she did that, and then she started with her fake laugh as it was trailing off in the distance. It was great. Like, these sort of promos and just playing whatever this character is continues to be, I think, Naomi's greatest strength, you know, in this entire run. I'm, you know, just after maybe seeing the match on Saturday, I hope she's able to find a similar unique voice in her in-ring style by the time this match happens.
Michael Cole was busy after talking to Nick Khan and Paul Levesque. He got an update that Gunther is out indefinitely. What was it they described? An orbital blowout.
Okay.
Sounds like you know.
Sounds like a band.
Like noses that are on sale or something. Yeah. It's an orbital blowout.
Check out the new orbital blowout.
Yes, but that's his deal. He's apparently getting sinus surgery and out for the time being. Yeah, so next week we have Sami Zayn against Rusev and Naomi against Io for the women's title in Ottawa. And then we would get another match announcement because Natalya, Maxine, and Tozawa, they confront Becky, who crossed the line during this segment and said, "What you said to Nikki was wrong." And Natalya challenges Becky, and Becky accepts, but not to face Natalya, but instead to face Maxine on Raw next week.
I'm kind of interested to see what Maxine has. Like, it's been quite a while since we...
How much All Japan Women has she learned over the last 6 months?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, like, can you imagine the tape study, you know, that Maxine might be doing with both Tozawa and Natalya by her side? Come on. She might surprise a lot of us next week.
Seth Rollins, LA Knight, World Heavyweight title. So Knight is trying to go after Heyman early on, and then Rollins takes over during the break. Knight would fight back with a superplex and then a neck breaker. He goes for his jumping elbow, but Rollins gets the knees up, buckle bomb, and then misses a stomp. So Knight hits his version of the burning hammer, which is kind of like a, I don't know, like a crackling, I don't know, rubber hammer. Stops a blunt force trauma. Pedigree gets blocked, and then Knight hits his DDT, does the leaping elbow off the top. Again, the BFT is blocked. So Knight then drop kicks Rollins, sending him over the desk, and gets caught low from Rollins, who sends him into the post, removes the padding, and tells Knight he's going to make sure that LA Knight never walks again. He's going to paralyze LA Knight. So before he can do so, Punk comes to save the life of LA Knight by jumping the barricade and attacking Rollins. So the match is thrown out after 13 minutes and 55 seconds. Knight then pulls Punk off because he's pissed because, hey, my head was about to get caved in there and you blew it. So he pulls Punk off. They have their disagreement. But then Braun runs out, and he runs full force and spears the life out of CM Punk on the floor. Braun and Bronson attack LA Knight. They deliver a spear to Knight. He is hit with a stomp, and then they are standing in the center, posing on the floor when Roman Reigns arrives, and he takes out Reed with a Superman punch, attacks Braun in the ring, and then finally stares down Seth to get his hands on him for the first time since WrestleMania. And Punk and Knight have to lay down forever throughout all of this, so they're just dead. And Rollins bails out of the ring, and that allows Reed and Braun to go after Reigns. Rollins comes back stomping Reigns. The whole crowd is chanting yeet, and no Jey Uso in this whole segment, nor an explanation. Mm-hmm. So Reigns was left for dead. Braun spears him. Reed hits three tsunamis, but in the highlight of the entire show, removed his shoes, and he has now taken the second pair, the tribal thief. And that is how the show ended, with the Vision standing tall from head to toe.
Yeah, I didn't think he'd be taking another pair of shoes.
Oh, so, I feel he almost had to at this point. Where, like, this dude's going to be in, like, Crocs by the end of this feud.
I mean, by the end of this feud, how many pairs of shoes is Bronson Reed going to have around his neck? He's gonna look like a footlocker.
He's going to be a hunchback by the end of this.
Yeah, I can't wait. Imagine, like 15 pairs of shoes around a dude's neck.
Yeah.
Could be awesome.
It does make me wonder, like...
It'd be like a walking shoe rack.
Yeah, like how much of this was just like a spur of the moment? Like taking
what?
The shoes, it seems
no,
like
you're not taking Roman Reigns' shoes. You might take Akira Tozawa's shoes without telling anybody, but Roman Reigns' shoes, you're not doing that.
Okay, I'll give you that. But like, there's no way you could tell me like this thing would like catch on in such a way that they've made this like his central character defining trait is stealing shoes.
Yeah,
can't tell me. On the next season of Unreal, that's a real scene where we're going to have Michael Kirschenbaum with Ryan Ward saying, hey, what about this? I'm sorry. I will call bullshit on that scene, that anyone was plotting this out to be what it has become. Like, this
I will
just
tell
feels
you,
like,
if it gets covered on Unreal, it'll probably be credited to Paul Levesque, who's just like, you know, I'm
what
really
about,
into
what
shoe,
about this?
Shoe culture.
It's, when it comes to shoes, it's not about up here. It's what you feel in here. This is what WWE is. I don't want to be stuck in a room taking questions. So there you go.
It's not what's on your feet. It's what's in your heart.
Yes. Yeah. It's we'll talk more about Yoda Levesque on Unreal as he is portrayed. That was Raw to end things off. What do you see coming out of this? Because you had like multiple challengers all in the mix here. And like, it feels like you're like, you have Reigns, you have Knight, and you have Punk. You know, we kind of talked about this. There was no Jey Uso in any of this. Yeah, I feel like that at least deserved some, like, there should have been some cover for that, because it was kind of odd that he wasn't there and there was no explanation for it either.
Yeah.
They could have said, like, he's back home or he's whatever.
But they could build up to another moment just like this next week. Reed can take another pair of shoes and out comes Jey Uso, and that'll kind of answer that, right?
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how they sort of, like, settle the whole LA Knight CM Punk thing. Obviously, again, we're a lot of weeks away from it, but it feels like they are assembling the sort of core of a war games match between these two factions, right?
I think with like your Vision and who's to say if like they add somebody before Survivor Series, that I feel like that would be your group to be on one side of War Games, and you've kind of, you're building up this opposite side, but.
And with multiple tsunamis, I'm imagining Reigns isn't seen for quite a while.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he just left, and then he just came back.
He's got a schedule. He's got five kids to raise, man. Come on.
Well, yeah. it will be to be determined. Because it's like Cody, like Roman also has to do that Street Fighter film as well. So, I mean, that is in the horizon for those two.
What I'm very curious about is... when AEW is planning to do Blood and Guts, because I think we can already see it's being sort of like hinted at that they might be building up towards their first women's Blood and Guts.
Yeah.
And the timing is approaching closer and closer to when WWE might be doing theirs. So I'm guessing AEW will do theirs a lot earlier than that, but Yeah, the two war games are going to be a lot closer than previous years.
What'd you think of Raw? The Raw after SummerSlam.
I love the conclusion. You know, like, lack of result, be damned. I mean, you did get a result. The man's shoes got robbed, all right? That's a bigger result than LA Knight losing or Seth Rollins losing.
Like, what does this culminate with? Like, that's what I want to know. Like,
the man getting his shoes back, I guess.
Well, he's got it. Like, but now it's like a significant amount. Like, how many more can he give up?
I don't know. I think it's a WrestleMania level type of build. I think as a follow-up, like, to make Rollins and this ruse of the century feel like it was this, like, the ruse of the century, something significant that completely shook this company. I thought
did they call it that again? Because after Saturday, like, that was clearly the marketing term. They're the ruse of the century. Yeah, they did call it that tonight.
Rollins on the Rich Eisen show himself is referring to it as that. So that is the branding, because the original one was the heist of the century.
Well, this then I think Levesque tweeted out something about, he called it the heist of the summer or something like that. So I don't know what the ruse of the century.
Well, why is that one the heist? This one is the heist of the summer. That's much smaller than the century.
Well, I mean,
so he's saying it's not as great.
Maybe not. I mean, was this one better than the Mania one? Was it
it depends on who you ask. Depends on who you ask, but I thought they made Seth Rollins and his championship reign feel like a very significant moment in hindsight, in retrospect, and the rest of the show I thought was like all right, I thought it was a decent Raw following up after SummerSlam. How about you? Yeah. What do you think?
Fine follow up. I wouldn't say like there were any like super hot matches on the show, but. It was like I enjoyed that Becky Nikki segment quite a bit. The closing angle was good. Like it got all your stars kind of all together into that one big segment. But I would say it was like a kind of middling edition of Raw overall.
What would be the difference maker? Like just you thought it was missing maybe like a really hot match.
I think that's going to affect kind of my thought of like a 2.5 hour show. Like there's some like average wrestling on the show, but, you know, it was decent follow up. I wouldn't say it was like overwhelmingly great. Like you're not coming out of this, like all these new hot directions that you're salivating over either. Mm-hmm. Like it was a bit of a, you know, you're also coming off of like what, 7 hours of WWE that we watched over the last two nights. So, we are going to sign off on the YouTube channel. You know what to do on your way out the door. And then we are going to keep things going because the party continues over at forum.postwrestling.com. We're taking your feedback on the cafe. If you're not joining us there, we're back on Wednesday night after Dynamite. And again, we will be dropping our first review of WWE Unreal on Tuesday, going through episode one.
I have yet to watch it, so I'll be doing that. Right after this.
Maybe you should watch it as we do the review. We'll just get your live thoughts.
Okay, sure.
Scene by scene. Mm-hmm. Okay, we will continue now as we move all over to the forum.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.